Today, we're talking with Shauna Chu. Shauna is a sought-after speaker, leadership coach, and pet owner. She helps leaders and their teams evolve to become master communicators and sales champions. I am your host, Zachary Alexander. Please don't forget to hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcast so that you won't miss any new episodes. Before the 2020 lockdown, lack of communication was one of the most cited challenges for teams and organizations. Post-lockdown, pulling together and being on the same page is one of the most important things we can do to climb out of the hole of 2020. So we are talking with an expert who can help us turn things around and master communications. Shauna, welcome to the Subscription Maker Podcast.
I'm thrilled to be here, Zachary.
So what does being a master communicator mean to you?
It's such a good question, because one of my favorite quotes from George Bernard Shaw was, and I'm loosely using it, the challenge with communication is the illusion it's been achieved. So here's the challenge. I mean, everybody thinks they're amazing communicators. You know, people are like, I told them and I did this, and but that doesn't mean they heard it. So I don't even know if I could say, I know I'm not one, because it's a continual evolution, but that's my goal. So let me also talk about—
No, I have to disagree with you on it. I think you are a master communicator.
Oh, look at you. Thank you. Well, that is the goal, being the best communicator I can be. So that means I educate myself, study, spend the time. And I remember when I work with my coaching clients, I usually tell the story of my dad, and my dad was a master builder. So what does that mean? Well, my dad could take a nail and one tap, drive it. I mean, watching him work, he knew how to use his tools and he knew how to weld them well. I mean, whack, whack, whack. Well, I know the concept of hitting, you know, a nail with a hammer. The challenge is, if you ever watch me do it, I bend the nail, I hit myself, I lock the wall. So it's the same with communication. The idea of communication is really simple. It's speaking, it's talk, it's listening, it's nonverbal, but becoming a master at it takes a continual process and working towards this and having somebody sort of help you and catch you and give you some tools to say, this is how you do it. Because just like master carpenter or master anything, you don't just suddenly become it or announce, well, I'm a master builder, I'm a master communicator. So I just think it's one of those things that I dig, I love it, and it's ongoing, because the challenge of communication is the illusion it's been achieved.
Would you give us a couple of tips on what we can do to improve our communication?
Oh, I'd love to. I use a series of tools, and the tools are really pivotal when we're in a situation with my coaching clients or when I'm talking one-on-one. And so right now, out of the blue, a couple of things are the most important thing is to become masterful at communication is less about telling, less about showing, less about selling. It's way more about asking. So if you really want to be known as a master communicator, becoming a better and better questioner, asker, is probably one of the most important things you can focus on. And it's opposite of what we normally do. We want to be really good at speaking. We want to be really good at communicating. And our best thing is being really good at questioning.
Now, do you use any assessments like the Clifton Strengths assessment when you're dealing with your coaching clients?
It's a really good question. And there are so many ways that you can find out your natural tendencies. And I have a bias about it. So I've done them all. I've done, you know, this is part of the same as the DISC. And then you've got the Enneagram. And then everything every time something comes up, the fascination one, the one with animals, you know, are you a bear? Are you a dolphin? And here's what I've come to realize. If you're doing the internal work to become more masterful as a communicator, when you take one of those assessments, you pretty much figure, you're like, oh yeah, I knew that. So the more wisdom you've got, so it's good to take them. But I don't have my clients do them, because the minute we put the goal in front of us, the intention of what you want or how we're working, then it really doesn't matter your style, because humans alter their style to get their goals. I have always found that to be true, at least.
Shauna, tell us a bit about ShoeBiz.
Oh, my last name, you know, it's all, and I don't know, it's all ShoeBiz. My dad actually coined it, and he's like, that's what you should call your company, ShoeBiz. And it's an umbrella company for a variety of entrepreneurial endeavors that I have. And so the main thrust of what I do under ShoeBiz is executive or leadership coaching. I also do presentation skill training. I also do professional speaking. So I'm a certified speaking professional. So it's the highest earned designation from the National and International Speakers Association.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to you about that a little later.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I do that. So that's one element, and I love it. I'm passionate about it. And one of the major reasons is because I love to serve people. But I also have some other endeavors that go underneath this umbrella. I own a horse boarding facility, and I lease it to a horse riding school. I own an Airbnb, and different things that I do, all for residual forms of income, of course. Multiple sources of income, I guess, is what I should say.
So what's it like to run a business for almost four decades?
Well, it's fun, and it's an evolutionary process. You know, when I first started ShoeBiz, what I was doing, I went through finishing school three times. So that's a whole different story. when I was, you know, in a nutshell, when I was 12, I lived on a farm, and my mother went, oh my gosh, no one will ever marry her. So she sent me to finishing school. And this is when you wore white gloves, you know, stuff you can use nowadays. Well, we didn't wear white gloves. We were just taught, you know, when to wear them, set a table, all that. Anyway, as I evolved, I started realizing that through finishing fashion and commercial work, I started teaching and I started producing fashion shows. So the beginning of the company was all about fashion production, commentary, all of this. I did some of the big shows in Portland and developed some of the big ones that happened when fashion shows were very prevalent. And then it altered as I altered. And I think business it's important to understand that the way we think it's going to go, especially if you're opening your own thing, you think this is the way it's going to be. And then, well, if you're really paying attention and using your brain, it's not what you think you're providing. It's what your market is in need of. So when people started saying, oh my heavens, I could really use help with that, and I had the skills of it, it was sort of the way I started coaching was I was speaking professionally, and a company would come up and go, oh my heavens, your thought process, or you're doing things I've never heard of before. Would you come and talk to my team? And next thing I know, I'm like, well, the team only is really a directive of the leader. So I should be talking to the leader. If you want real changes here, it should be those people in either new leadership positions, managers, or top leaders. And that's how I began coaching. So that's what I would say, what it's like to run a company, or what it's like is that, number one, I think you should love it and have fun. But number two, be willing to evolve your business as you evolve and as your customers or clients.
What kind of challenges do you find when working with large organizations?
What a great question. And I guess it is a challenge. I guess it's just a reality. So what my favorite client, or the one that I think relates to me the most, is someone who, even if they work for a corporation, are taking their own career in their hands. So when working with a corporation, when somebody says, well, we would like you to come and coach one of our leaders, there's two ways to look at this. Number one, that leader needs help, or we have so much faith, or we believe this leader has so much potential that we're going to invest in that leader. And that's the way I always look at it. I'm not generally, I can never solve a problem. People solve their own problems. I'm there to ask and challenge and help people uncover for themselves and discover for themselves where they should be going and what they need to do. But when I'm working with an entrepreneur and I'm working with someone who is a leader inside and they've decided they wanted coaching, oh, knock the shingles off the roof. We get so much accomplished. But when I'm working inside an organization, sometimes I will have less results because that person didn't seek it themselves. That, I think, is the biggest challenge. Even though I'm thrilled to do it, and I have several different organizations where I'm working with all their leaders, but even inside that organization, you'll find people who are like embracing it. I want to take control of my career. And other people are like, well, I'm already doing that. Their defense, all the problems show up in coaching and it's less effective. Where if they paid for it themselves, it's so different. So I believe in investing in yourself, whether you're in a corporation or you run your own business. That's particularly important to invest in yourself is when you are running your own business. But if you're a leader, you're running your own empire inside that corporation. So why wait for somebody to help you?
Okay, to be fair, what kind of challenges do you face when you're working with a small organization or a startup?
And what's small? You know, nowadays, everybody can do whatever they want and they can have a one-person shop and be making just so much money. So I don't know if small is the right word, but thank you. Instead of a corporation, when somebody... It's how much do you invest in yourself when it is just you or your budget or it's your beginning? Oh my heavens, there's so much to learn. And where do I buy? Do I buy a marketing program? Do I buy coaching? Do I buy, you know, and it's not even a buy, it's an investment. And I always looked at it because I did all this and I spent so much money. Well, I shouldn't say spent it. I thought I was investing it, but really I was wasting it. Because I didn't know what I didn't know. So Jim Rohn, who is a business philosopher, used to say, if you want to make a living, get good at your job. If you want to make a fortune, get good at yourself. I would say the first thing to do is invest in mentorship, coaching, whatever it might be, so that your brain gets activated in such a way that you're thinking like a leader. I would tell you one story that I absolutely love. I had a woman who saw me speak someplace. I get most of my clients from, like, if they hear me on this or they see me speak and they go, oh my God, I love her energy. And I think she's got something in there that I want to learn. So this woman paid for coaching, even though she was with a very large organization and she was at a pretty high level. Well, as I was working with her over multiple years, I might add, investing in herself, she was going for a very large promotion. And she was going to run an entire state. So we were strategizing. We were talking about strategy, what she should do. And I said, you know, you've been paying for your own coaching for all these years. Why don't, as part of your compensation, you ask for leadership coaching? So she went, can I do that? And I'm like, yes, you can. So she went in, asked for the moon, and said, I would like you to pay for professional coaching. And here's what they said to her. Well, you don't need professional coaching. And the beauty of it was she went, well, I've been paying for it myself. And they, of course, gave her coaching and gave her the promotion because that was the initiative. It was like just the best thing for her to be able to get whatever she wanted. I hope that answered your question.
It does. I was just thinking about how we go back and address something. You talked about how your company evolved over the years. And I wanted to go deeper into that. And talk about, because on this show, we talk about evolving. We talk about that as a pivot. And we talk about looking at the market and basically saying, okay, the market has changed. Or I had a theory of what my business was going to be. But then when I got in there and I started to do it, I realized it was something else and I needed to pivot.
Yes. Okay.
So what I wanted to kind of drill down on is, what is that process like for you? Because you've been at it for 40 years. That means, and you, I did talk to someone just to be just to be honest, Jeff Wald, he created a company, he did a business plan, he sold it to ADT, and he didn't change anything. Only thing he did was add extra technology. But for most people, they got to change. They got to evolve. They got to pivot. So I wanted to ask you, what was that process, or what is that process like for you? How do you, is there a set process, or is there a set process that you use when you're pivoting?
In my case, and the evolution has been immense. And I hear what you're saying, because right now they're all like, the minute that we found out that the market shifted, we pivoted. You hear it all the time. And I think sometimes as a leader, we're thinking, I'm not pivoting enough, or what? Is it a complete turnaround? And here's what my premise is with my business, but also every person I work with. My premise is, if you stay with what is generally and true about all human beings. So if you work on your thinking, and if you're listening to your customers, it doesn't matter what happens to the market. It doesn't matter what happens to the weather. It doesn't matter if we have a terrorist attack. Nothing matters if you will stay true to your essence of what you deliver. Now, if my clients are saying, we need this, or I've come to listen to my clients and they'll say, oh, we're reading this book and we're really finding value, I'll go get that book immediately. I will read that book. So that's one way I guess you would say pivot. I'll say, where does this fit into what we already are doing? And then how can I use what they're already investing in to help them go further with it? That's one way that I do it. However, the human condition is the human condition. Business is real simple. Somebody has a need, you fill it, they pay for that. You provide value, and the more value you provide, the more they're willing to pay you. This is not, oh, the world's shifted, we're all living at home. Now, certain business capitalized on the fact that there was a need. So I just don't see it for myself as a turn, or what I would say, pivot. I consider it same, stay to your core, which is listening and figuring out the needs of your customers. And as they evolve, you evolve with them.
Okay. So who do you, Shauna, professional coach, who do you talk to when you're thinking about pivoting?
You know, this is why I pay for coaching. And I have for a long time. I was just thinking about this for my clients. You know, are you going to talk to your peers? Well, no, because then you're going to, now certain peers, I've been involved with a mastermind with peers for years. And we can talk about that in a sec. But my real peers, I'm not. You're not going to drop down your veil and let them see that you're struggling, or that you don't know, or that you have fear. So not really peers. Your family, forget about it. You know what my family always does? It's like, oh, you're smart, you'll figure it out. And I'm like, well, thank you for nothing. And then you're certainly not going to talk to your team, because you're not going to let down your veil. So as a leader, as somebody who is building or creating or working inside a business, unless you are willing to invest in professional help, or when I was really starting out, I applied for a mentor program. You had to apply. You had to put in your business plan. You had to put in your financial goals. You had to interview. And that mentor who had a business had to want you, and you had to want them. It was quite a process. And I ended up finding a woman who was a pilot and had a fabulous business consulting small businesses. And I remember after we got hooked together, I said to her, why did you agree to do this for free? And she was a PhD. I mean, she was just crazy. And she said, Shauna, people pay me gobs of money so that I can give them help and advice and don't take it. I figured you would. And I was like, I will do whatever you tell me to do. So I just feel that that's that's that piece. And then getting a mastermind. And a mastermind comes from a variety of places. Number one, Think and Grow Rich. They talk about the mastermind. I would definitely review that. And then the Bible talks about a mastermind, which is whenever two or more are among, or, you know, I'm among them. And so there's a spiritual connection where you believe for the other people in your mastermind, even more than they could believe for themselves. So I've been in a mastermind, and they're not that easy to form. Now, people are now letting people pay to be in masterminds. I think that's fine. But we all had invested heavily into a coaching mentor, and really heavily. I remember at the time thinking to myself, OMG. And I can't believe, and I remember my husband at the time said, what are you thinking? And I went, I will earn this threefold back, which of course is what I did. But all of us in the mastermind were under this one particular coach, and we decided we wanted more. So what we had in common, even though our businesses were very different, is that we all were investing in the same amount. All of us were learning some of the same skills. And now we've been masterminding for 20 years.
Yeah, I guess
that coach.
Where that question comes from is I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and ask them that question. Okay, who do you talk to? Who do you get your advice from? And you would be surprised how few actually say a coach. You know, it just never, it never occurs to them that maybe there's an opportunity to talk to someone else, that that would be a good thing. And that's why I bring it up. That's why I like talking to coaches. Having said that, so what's the best advice you ever got?
Boy, there's been so many pieces. I can't even tell
you. Oh, just one now. Come on, one. What's the best advice you ever got? There had to be something.
This really changed things for me. I was getting through things, whether it be a challenge that happened, whether it be a book I was reading, I was getting through it. I was in a frenzy. Not that that's surprising, as you see my energy. But I wanted to get through the dark places. And one coach took me aside and said, what would it feel like, Shauna, if instead of getting through things, you got from them? And I went, oh my heavens, what? And so instead of my intent was, by the way, I know I'm giving good content. One of my passions, and hopefully this will be make it so that you understand how true I am to what I do, is I am an animal advocate, and I am fostering puppies right this minute. Then they're in my office. So if you hear a little, it's because these puppies are waking up. So, but that was the biggest piece of advice, where instead of getting from things, getting from books, or excuse me, getting through books, getting through challenges, getting through the pandemic, what are we getting from it? And when you ask that question, everything shifts. Your intent, your perspective, everything. Getting from, not through.
You just told me you were an animal rights advocate, and you were helping with these puppies, which brings me to my next question. Actually, that was a good setup. So, kudos to the puppies. What is the women in the pet industry?
I'm so glad you brought this up. And if anybody's listening so far and they're loving some of the nuggets or some of the stuff, this is an opportunity for me to be very vulnerable with your listeners. It was an idea I had, another business I was going to put together. And I realized that the pet industry itself was very, I thought, fragmented. So all the pet sitters were over here, and all the manufacturers were over here, and all of the retailers were over here, and all of the trainers were over here, and all the daycares were over here. Why weren't they talking to each other? So I think it was 2012, I started researching, because I love animals so much. I live on, well, one of my businesses has always been a horse boarding facility. And so I was like, I know I could help these people. So I developed this Women in the Pet Industry Network. It was an online network, and it was for business women. And my goal was to sit across the table, and what you're doing in the pet sitting space should be able to help the people over here in the manufacturing space. And let's talk, let's figure it all out. And I had some wonderful rabid fans. I had it for about 5 years. no, from 2012, longer than that, until 2020, when the pandemic just threw us for a loop. There was just no way to sustain this particular online business. No one was, every single one of the conferences are all down. It was, the writing was on the wall. So my
apocalyptic.
Really. So I shut it down. And I consider it a huge success in many ways. We developed the first ever Women in the Pet Industry award. So the top women in the pet industry magazine, we produced, we helped women. I still have clients from the pet industry, but I lost it. So that failure is one that I just realized that I'm glad I did it. Yeah. But it's no longer in existence.
So what advice would you give someone who would want to start a network like you did?
People have underneath the network. And I think right now, my goal had been to do cross categories. And I don't think in today's market, I think the lesson was it's not as valuable as niche networks. So like who I talk to now are people who really want a different mindset to become master communicators and be better leaders. And it doesn't matter what industry you're in, but it's very niched into people who have an entrepreneurial mindset. Inside the pet space, they're going to stay kind of divided. But I think that's, somebody once said, the riches are in the niches. And I think it's true based on what I've learned. I would say niche and figure out who that customer is. Now, once you get that down, you could expand that to other niches and build a bigger empire and scale it. But I made a mistake by attempting to do it first.
So I remember I told you we talk about your speaking journey.
Yes. Well,
now we're at that point.
I thought for sure I turned that off. There's another mistake.
No problem. What I like to tell people is this is a podcast. It's raw.
Oh, I love that.
So things happen. It's not a studio gig, you know, where you can control everything. Yeah. It's a podcast. Things happen. Now it's time to go back. We, you know, earlier I told you that we were going to get to your speaking career. We're at that point now. Tell us about your speaking journey.
So you may laugh at me when the third time was I had gone in after I came off the road. I worked as a professional entertainer for years and I came off the road and didn't have any. There was not a lot of work for an unemployed entertainer in Oregon. And so one of these, a friend I knew said that there was a modeling school. And since I'd been through finishing and fashion twice, I went in and I offered my services. And I said, I could teach, you know, movement for models. And they said, wow, okay, well, we need this. So go write us a program, put us through it. And then after they agreed to hire me, they said, we'd like you to go through our program. And you know, so you know our philosophies. So that was my third time through. And while I was teaching, I was continuing to educate myself. But the only reason I had an opportunity to speak in front of these students to speak was because I was an expert. So in the middle of all this, I stumbled upon an association called the National Speakers Association. And there was one in Oregon. And I remember laughing when this man said to me, oh yeah, there's an association for speakers. And I laughed. I went, is it like the Filbert Association? Like, how could, there's, what does that mean? You know, because in my mind and in my heart, and even to this day, you're not a speaker. Everyone is a speaker. You should be an expert. And then you speak about your expertise. So he said there was a speaker school, which I thought was hysterical. So I signed up and I went. And this woman was on the main stage and she was telling people how to put together a speech and how much money she could make. And I thought, I have been doing this for like a decade. You know, I'm an expert. I know how to teach. I tell stories. And I thought, sign me up. And right then I joined the Oregon one, the national one. And then I went on to earn my certified speaking professional designation. So I recommend the National Speakers Association. And there's an international, a global, they're all hooked together. And it is the most amazing association. You cannot belong until you actually have made money as a speaker. That's That's where it puts it up. So start with Toastmasters. That's the first thing I would always say. However, Toastmasters, the one caveat is Toastmasters is very rule-based. And even though I think it's brilliant, it's very rule-based. And the national, when you're really good at what you do, you can break rules. But there's still the etiquette of the stage, which I think Toastmasters is step one. And then get out there and start speaking as an expert. Please don't bill yourself as a speaker, because who cares that you speak? I want to know what your value is. I want to know what you bring to the platform. And then the National Speakers Association, and then go after your certified speaking professional. You have to speak to 100 different, it's 250 speeches, but you have to have at least 100 different clients. And it's over a 5-year period, and you have to make X amount of money. And it's really worth going for. And it teaches you to be an incredibly more valuable speaker, or what I would consider expert.
Okay, so this is something we hadn't talked about, but I'm always curious. Are you familiar with what we're calling this now, influencer community, becoming an influencer? I think what it used to be called is being a spokesperson.
Yes.
Yes. So what do you think about this influencer mindset versus being a speaker?
Well, and once again, I am a speaker. I'm a certified speaking professional, but I'm much more considered myself as expertise or an expert in my field. And I think as an influencer, we may have the emphasis wrong. Like I believe in speaking, you have the emphasis wrong, that you being a speaker values no one. You providing expertise is a lot. So you being an influencer, just what? It just makes you feel good. And companies want to belong to you because you have a huge following. But what are you influencing? And what is your passion and your heart saying? So I would rather be a servant of my tribe than an influencer of my tribe. Because my job is not to influence you. My job is to challenge and question and help you. And if you find value in that, of course, you'll follow me or take my suggestions. And I think, not that I'm against it. Of course, why would I be against anything? However, I would wonder why you want to be an influencer. Is it to serve, or is it ego-based? Was that too harsh?
No, absolutely not. You're allowed.
Okay, good. I'm nothing if not, you know, thinking, flicking my thinking.
Okay. So recently I've been talking to a bunch of magicians, and they have a weird way of thinking. Okay. So I talked to Mark Levy and I talked to Tim Picciarello. And basically what they said is that a magician always has a trick or a gag in their back pocket to show that they're a magician. So, as we start to wrap up, Shauna, is there a question you wish more people would ask you that would show them that you are the real deal?
Great question, Zachary. And I would say it's less a question they would ask me than if they would be open to me asking them. When I ask a question that they had never thought of before, people know I'm the real deal. Number one, because I'm good at it. Number two, I really care about them. And so then they go, oh my heavens, I never considered that before. And that's not even a trick. It's who I am intrinsically. And so that's what I pull out of my pocket is a question. And even in a dinner party, if I can ask a question that is thoughtful and helps people get better, man, I've had a great night. And that's how I get my people find me.
So do you have anything new that you feel comfortable telling us about?
I do. I just put together a quiz to uncover the blind spots you have as a leader. And it's a series of small questions and you answer them. And there's four different categories that you can fall into. And then my goal is to help you. So by after you take the quiz, there's a series of emails. I do have an online course also called Level Up Your Leadership, or you can call me directly and I will do a 30-minute clarifying call. And every time somebody, I've had two this week, and both of them I went, you've got 30 minutes of my time. I'm not selling you anything. What can I help you with? And it's just, I love that I get to do this. So that's my new thing. Number one, the quiz, which is on my website, shaunashu.com. And number two, that leads you into either a call with me. And if you go on my website, you can get a clarifying call with me as well. There's no cost to it. You just have to schedule through on my calendar.
So what's the best way to follow you on social media?
I'm all over, like everybody is. I'm on LinkedIn, you know, Shauna Shu, S-H-A-W-N-A, and then S-C-H-U-H, because people think Shu, like, it's pronounced like the one on your foot, but it's spelt in the German way. And then I'm on Facebook. And on both of those platforms, whichever one you like the best, I write a weekly question. It's a Q day. On Tuesday, I always do a question. And the response I get is usually so valid, and it comes from my life. So it's really things that are really going through my mind, and then a question. And if we keep asking ourselves questions, we get better. So I just give that out on a weekly basis. People can get onto that from my website as well.
Shauna, thanks so much for joining us on the Subscription Maker podcast.
You have been adorable. Plus, I've been listening to your stuff. It's so good. No wonder you have such a great following. Zachary, you're the man. Thank you.
This is your host, Zachary Alexander, subscription service designer at subscriptionmaker.net. Please join us next time as we talk about what it takes to be a successful subscription maker.